This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Hey, we are talking with Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, about Madeline Kingsbury and the tragic end to her life, the murder of Madeline Kingsbury. They have now made an arrest. Just the other day, prosecutors said in the complaint that a roll of Gorilla Tape found at the home Madeline and Adam Fravel shared was the same color and width as the one found on her remains. What's your take on the amount of time it took between the body, or not the body, but the Madeline being missing and then them finally being able to make the arrest on Adam almost simultaneously at the same time of them finding the body? What was the reason for the waiting on this? Because it sounds like there was a lot of evidence here that behind the scenes that is now popping up that makes you wonder, could have it been done sooner?
Well, you know, that's hard for me to know the strategies of the investigators and the detectives. I'm assuming that they didn't want to make an arrest until they felt they had enough to hold the guy. And, you know, whatever all those variables were, I'm not privy to it, but I'm just glad that they did find the body, because otherwise you would have another one of these cases where everybody is fairly convinced that the evidence is strong that he was the perpetrator, but they just didn't have enough to make it stick. So apparently when they found the body, it's like, okay, we've got all the dots connected here. So yay for the arrest.
Definitely. When you say enough, do you feel like enough varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and what they feel is enough for an arrest?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. That's one of the problems, I think, with our massive country with so many jurisdictions, and things are done so differently from one community to another community, often within the same state. You know, you have very different strategies. Not all of the law enforcement agencies communicate well with people in other areas. And we've seen that, like with the Golden State Killer in California, who was basically killing up and down the state in, you know, hundreds of miles apart at some point. And the law enforcement agencies were not sharing information with each other. And I think that delayed the arrest for years, you know, for many years. If they had in the beginning been sharing information with each other, there could be people that were saved.
It seemed like there was a lot here that we're now learning about retrospectively that were obviously huge red flags. And individually, when someone's in a situation with a person that they've been with for a long time, maybe they share children, maybe they share a home, it's not just as easy to jump and run the second somebody says something that's out there that then will be argued as, oh, it's just a joke, but still very passive aggressively being disturbing. One of the most disturbing things that we've learned that Fravel allegedly had said when they were having a disagreement, that if she didn't listen up, she would end up like Gabby Petito. Apparently he had quite an obsession with that case.
And that is definitely psychological abuse, manipulation, and he's giving a very clear message there, you know, and I think that's one of the things that you see with domestic violence abusers is they know how to make these veiled threats. Well, believe me, the victim knows what it means, and the majority of female murder victims are killed by a current or former partner, which is rather horrifying, and the risk of violence or murder is highest when the victim is trying to leave the relationship, which was the case with Madeline. She had officially broken up with him, even though they were still living in the same house, which is never a good idea if you can, you know, not do that. And she had indicated she was interested in another man. And with the abuser being very invested in power and control, this really heightens the danger of the domestic violence. You know, now it has come out in the complaint that he had struck her in the face while not realizing she was on a video call with a friend. And he had sent, they had sent texts back and forth about him putting his hands around her neck and throwing her down on the ground in front of the children. So who knows the extent of the psychological manipulation and the violence that Madeline had lived with? You know, victims stay not because there's a flaw within the victim. I think that's been a myth that's been perpetuated for years, but there's a very effective brainwashing process that goes on. And it makes it very difficult to leave, particularly when the couple has children together. Mm-hmm. They tend to blame themselves when things go badly. And this is what the abuser reinforces over and over and over, that, well, I only did this because you did X, Y, Z. And they tend to be optimistic and positive, loving people. They hope for a change. You know, if he apologizes and says, I won't do this again, they tend to believe him. Mm-hmm. And they also know on some level, even if, you know, they don't voice this to anyone, that things will escalate if they try to get out of the relationship. Yeah. Sometimes they fear he's going to hurt them, try to get custody of the kids, or in many cases, they fear he will kill himself, which is often a threat that's made. You know, if you leave me, I'll kill myself. And sure, sometimes that happens, you know, so it's very hard to get out. And it speaks a lot to Madeline's fortitude that she was trying and it just ended terribly.
She was trying and she was psychologically trapped at that moment. When you have people like this that are victimizing others, if it doesn't end in some sort of horrible tragedy, they just move on to victimize their next person. And it just kind of continues down this cycle. Yes. In those relationships, there's oftentimes the, what you just said, oh, it's not going to happen again. I want to be better. I want to do this. I want to do that. Number one, is there really hope for folks like this that do say, I want to get better. I don't want to do this anymore. But they'd first have to make that introspective look and actually do something about it. But how common is it that anybody who looks at their life and says, I've been treating you horribly this way, but it's a very innate and ingrained way of thinking, actually do ever make a change?
Yeah, it is nearly always manipulation when they make these promises. You know, with this kind of person, you typically see a Jekyll Hyde personality. Both are real, you know, and when the person is in their seductive phase, they are adoring, they're charming, they're loving, they really make their partner feel special. And this is manipulation, you know, it's all to keep the person hooked. And then when they go into this other part of their personality, it's not a multiple personality, this is just another compartmentalized way of the way that they view the world. This is more their real self. They are a monster, you know, and they're capable of doing absolutely horrible things. And then when they go back into the charming, adorative, effusive personality, it's basically just to keep her hooked because it works and they know it works. And they can convince the victim that, well, when I got so angry, it was because you did this thing. And over time, the victim is broken down and they start to believe this. And the cycle of violence just continues to repeat. It becomes more intense over time. And so the saying, oh, I'm so sorry, you drove me to it, but it'll never happen again. It's BS. It just continues because they have a severe personality disorder. And people with severe personality disorders are generally not real amenable to change. Now, when I would believe somebody that they really wanted to work on change is if they independently made the effort to go get help and committed themselves to treatment. And that means going regularly for a long period of time and really working on change. And in those cases, you have to look at the behavior. You have to look, what are they doing, not what are they saying? And these guys almost never voluntarily go to therapy. They may go to a, you know, domestic violence intervention program after they're arrested and they're adjudicated by the court and ordered into court-ordered treatment. Those programs do not have a high rate of success. I've worked in them, and it's just a really hard population to work with. You know, they know how to show up. They can charm the therapist, mm-hmm. you know, just like they charm their partner. partner, oh, he seems like such a nice guy. He's got a great sense of humor. He's saying these things that sound really insightful. But when they leave that, they go right back to the same old behavior. And I hate to be negative and pessimistic about it, but I think it's reality. Yeah. You don't see many of them make any personal growth.
I agree. That's something I think that needs to be stressed and understood more and not looked at in such rosy glasses sometimes of like, well, people can change. Not all the time. When you there's certain personality disorders that there ain't a high success rate at all. And even with what they may view as success, it's minimal to those of us around them who would they think they've made, you know, leaps and bounds. Are we in a culture where this sort of behavior from men, even and women too, if it's done reverse-wise, but right, more so men, where it's more dangerous because they can get support from it. They don't just have to stew on it alone. And it's not just, hey, you go out with your buddies or something and people, you know, complain about their spouses or their girlfriends and then, you know, they move on. Now it's this thing where they can go online, they can find groups, they can find all these sorts of things where people can commiserate on their own twisted ways of thinking and how the world is out to get them or how things aren't fair for them with their spouse and they're in the right. Does that just continue to breed a far more dangerous person than we were formerly able to breed?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what we've seen with the incel movement, which mm-hmm. is, you know, typically younger guys, but some of them are in their 30s, 40s now, who have connected online. And their goal, really, what they're doing is perseverating on their victimhood and how women are doing things to them. And it's a completely, you know, crazy way of looking at the world and looking at gender, but they do validate each other. They reinforce each other and they amplify and often advocate violence. And so it's, I think, a scary time. And we like to think that, you know, with all the progress women have made in the workforce and politically, and, you know, we have a female vice president now, we like to think things are better for women. On this level, I don't think we're going in the right direction.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Hey, if you like the podcast, be sure to press subscribe wherever you download them so you don't miss any breaking updates or discussions on the cases that we're following for you right here. Get an ad-free experience through Apple Podcasts when you subscribe to the family of True Crime Today podcasts right there. Get access to all of them ad-free for one low monthly fee or pay for the year and even get a super more discount. Try for 3 days free on Apple Podcasts right now. Tony Bruschi, stay with us.